This time, Ronefer sat straight up, the goose flesh rising on his arms and little trickles running down his spine. It was the very middle of the night, he could tell from the position of the moon. Yet he could hear furtive footsteps creeping down the stairs. He heard them cross the pavement, heard the faint rattle as the gate was opened, a tiny click as it closed. Incredulous, he let out his long-held breath. Not once, but twice, three times, really, since he must now give up believing in the helpful Ba. Gebu had gone out into that keft-filled darkness at an hour when all men in their right minds stayed in bed. Where could he be going? And why? Why? Ronefer got no answer to his questions, but he did not cease to ask them whenever the nocturnal mystery was repeated, which it was at irregular intervals. He did not, of course, ask any questions of Gebu. He would sooner have thrown himself into a crocodile's jaws. After a time, the hinge squeaked less frequently, then only rarely, or else, as his muscles hardened and his work grew correspondingly less exhausting, he slept more deeply and did not hear it. In either case, the matter receded to the back of his mind, still unexplained. It was merely one more thing about Gebu that he could not understand. Chapter 7. The cool days of winter passed, and the face of Egypt changed in accordance with the rhythm of the Nile, that miraculous river which brought new life and wealth each year to the long valley it watered. Each fall it overflowed its banks and spread over the fields in a silver flood. Islands disappeared, and men and animals walked about their business on a crisscross network of dikes. Each winter the waters withdrew, leaving behind a thick new layer of mud so black and fertile that two crops grew in Egypt, while other lands eked out one. Slowly the river shrank as the grain sprouted, grew, and covered the black with emerald, continued to shrink under the ever more powerful sun as the emerald ripened into gold. Now it was harvest time. Every available man went out into the fields to gather in the gold of grain and fodder. In the wake of the reaper's scythes, the black land showed again through the stubble, no longer moist and rich, but bone hard, desiccated, and beginning to crack in all directions under the burning sun. Eventually, the cracks would spread into treacherous gashes, sometimes 10 or 15 feet deep, and wide enough to trap a man's leg. Temple building ceased in this season to free more men for the fields. The faces in the stone-cutting shop changed accordingly. Only top craftsmen and young apprentices continued to work the stones. Gebu was in and out of the shop all day, eventually remaining for several hours in either the morning or the afternoon, personally overseeing or working alongside his craftsmen. The presence of the master, Ronefer discovered, sharpened Pa'i's already sharp eye and diminished his short temper to the vanishing point. To work under Pa'i these days was to feel yourself caught in a swarm of angry bees, all stinging, buzzing, and hurling themselves at you tirelessly. The only respite from the torment, which in Ranefer's resentful opinion caused more mistakes than it corrected, was during the midday break. In order to escape for a time from the sight of Pa'i as well as the sound of him, Ranefer began leaving the shop each day. He walked about the streets until the changing slope of his shadow on the heat-baked dirt underfoot told him he must return and begin again his interminable chipping at the rough red granite slab that would eventually become one side of the high priest's outer coffin. One midday, 40 long and miserable days after his apprenticeship had begun, his feet turned of themselves toward the street of the goldsmiths and carried him along the well-known way until he stood no more than a pebble's toss from Rex's courtyard wall. He went no closer. Until now, he had not dared to come this far. From the longing that rose inside him as he stood looking at the familiar, friendly gate, he knew it had been a mistake to come at all. Still he stood and stared, and remembered, until he felt the sun burning down on his bare feet and knew his shadow had crept behind him. He turned quickly, hurried along the street, and almost collided with somebody who shot out of the apprentice's quarters at that moment. Ranefer found himself looking into Hecate's astonished face.
"Ranefer!"
cried his friend, and the face split into a grin of delight.
"Greeting, Hecate,"
Ranefer said, and he backed off a step or two, suddenly overcome with self-consciousness. He had not meant to be caught hanging about Rec's shop like a stray dog. The stone dust that powdered him seemed a badge of slavery, and the two blood-stained rags about fingers of his left hand proclaimed the unskilled depths to which he had fallen. No longer was he the budding craftsman who, in spite of a menial position in the gold house, could teach apprentices their tasks. Hecate would now be far ahead of him in knowledge and skill and needed nothing he could offer. Ranefer hid his hands behind him and scoffed a toe in the dust, realizing unhappily that Hecate was doing the same. Self-consciousness was catching.
"Well," Hecate said with an effort at heartiness, "you're quite a stranger these days, as the caterpillar said to the butterfly."
Ranefer smiled in spite of himself, encountered Hecate's friendly, questioning eyes, and the self-consciousness diminished.
"Aye," he answered, "to myself as well as you. I do not know myself as apprentice to a stonecutter. I do not even wish to," he added, spitting contemptuously in the dust.
"You do not like it?
I hate it."
Hecate was silent. Ranefer did not blame him. There was nothing to say to such a statement.
"And you, Hecate?" he went on quickly. "Tell me how the work goes at Rex."
"It goes well. I have learned to draw wire, and Sata is teaching me to solder." This time, Ranefer was silent. Sata's face floated before his eyes an instant. Even with the scowl that his memory reluctantly but justly added, it seemed a face as kindly as a father's compared to Pa'i's. Pa'i's image suddenly blotted out the other, and Ranefer started guiltily.
"The midday is over. I must run or I'll taste that foreman's stick."
"But wait, we've scarcely said a word to each other."
"I know, I wish it were different."
"Can you not come again?"
"Nay, I..."
Ranefer glanced toward the gold house and turned away.
"I cannot come here."
"Then somewhere else. At the day's end, perhaps. Today. I'll meet you wherever you like."
"I can do that," said Ranefer,
realizing for the first time that there was nothing to prevent it. That working in different shops, at different trades, did not mean he and Hecate must keep to different worlds.
"I will do it. Where shall we meet? The ferry landing?"
"Aye, or better, the fish dock beyond. You'll surely come now."
"I'll come. Goodbye till then."
With a wave, Hecate made off toward the gold house, and Ranefer started at a run back to his red granite slab. His feet were light with the thought of seeing Hecate again, seeing him often, perhaps every day. All afternoon he thought of nothing but the coming meeting, and when the day was over at last, he was out of the shop and running toward the fish dock the instant his coppers were in his sash. Hecate had farther to come. Ranefer stood for some moments among the great nets spread out to dry on the dock before he saw the familiar lithe figure, so much better fleshed than his own, squirming through the crowd about the ferry landing and running toward him.
"I was afraid you might change your mind," Hecate panted, joyfully clapping him on the shoulder. "Come, let us get away somewhere."
"The thicket by the river is cool and private," Ranefer suggested. As they started along the road, he added,
"Why did you think I would change my mind?"
"I don't know. You're an odd one sometimes." Hecate smiled sideways at him. Ranefer returned the smile uncomfortably, but could think of nothing to say. They turned off the road presently into the lane between the flower fields, then followed the meandering path into the thicket. Foliage arched over their heads, casting a welcome shade made denser by the stands of tall reeds. Here there was still mud underfoot, cool and soothing after the hot, baked clay of the roads.
Ah, I can hear my toes telling each other what a fine fellow I am to bring them here, Hecate said. Look, that would make a fine place to sit. He pointed to a spot veiled from the path by only a thin fringe of swaying rushes. Something had crushed the grasses and weeds beyond down into a little nest. Hecate sloshed through the stretch of watery mud to it, then turned and bowed elaborately to Ronefer. Come into my storeroom, as the pelican said to the fish. Ronefer grinned and obeyed. It did look like a little cool green room with walls of foliage, a door of sedge stalks, and a thick springy carpet of matted undergrowth. There was just enough space for them to sit side by side and stretch their feet out. Now, Hecate said firmly, tell me about the stonework. Come, don't pull into your shell like a tortoise. It will do you good to say out loud how much you hate it. Curse if you like. There's no one to hear but me, and I don't mind. Ronefer could not help laughing, and as he laughed, he felt a knot untie somewhere inside him and realized he felt better already. It was impossible to stay in a shell with Hecate around, and it was impossible to feel altogether gloomy. He began to talk about the stone-cutting shop. It was noisy, it was gritty, it was altogether horrid. The foreman was a living wasp's nest, and the other apprentice a glum and stupid nobody with a chunk of granite where his head ought to be. That's better, Hecate said with satisfaction. And what do you do? Shape blocks, or what? Ronefer told him, fairly spitting out his frustration, what he did, and how he must keep his mind on it, no matter how tired or bored he was. Otherwise, this happens, he said, extending his bandaged fingers. And worse, oh, much worse. The undercraftsman, Zahotep, his hands are a ruin. Hecate, if my hands become like his, I could never go back to gold working. He had dropped his voice with the horror he felt, and for once Hecate, too, was subdued, his eyes fixed on the blood-stained bandages. You mean to go back to gold working someday, then, in spite of all? He said. I do. Ronefer flashed him a belligerent look. You may think I cannot, but I will find a way somehow. I even know a way. I have a plan. You do? What is it? But Ronefer did not want to talk about the plan, about the donkey and the little house at the edge of the desert, and studying with Zau. It sounded too improbable. It was safer not told. Not yet. No matter, he said. Tell me instead about the gold house. Is all the same there? Nay, not without you. Ronefer smiled one-sidedly. No doubt Sata and Garit and the others weep for me each morning before the gold is weighed. Aside from my absence, is all the same? Others are absent also. Ibni, to whom good riddance. And the scribe, you remember Hotepec, left a week before harvesting began. His child has the falling sickness. Hotepec is taking her to Abydos, to the priest of Ra there. Rek fashioned a little amulet from the sweep for her, so the priests might say their spells over it. Meanwhile, we have a new scribe. And you have learned to draw wire? And to solder? I am learning, I think, as the hare said when he tried to fly. Hecate added wryly. So far, I have not succeeded in making anything stick to anything else. But no doubt next week, or perhaps next year. Aye, Ronefer said. My boxes fell apart too, at first. Don't lose hope. One day they will stick, and then you will have no more trouble. Your father taught you to solder? Aye, but no doubt I have forgotten. It has been so long. And it will be longer before I can do it again. Curse Gebu and his granite. The boy sat in silence a moment. Then Ronefer added, I would rather have Gebu for a master, though, than that friend of his. What friend is that? Wenamun, the mason. He comes often to the shop. He came today. He reminds me of a keft. Wenamun, repeated Hecate, frowning. Does he wear a long cloak, winter and summer? Aye, that's the one. I have seen him often. He lives near the apprentice's quarters. He makes me shiver, but the man I sometimes see him with is worse. a great heavy-shouldered fellow with a scowl and a face like stone. Hecate broke off and turned to Ronefer with a sudden question in his eye. "That is Gebu," Ronefer told him. Hecate's expression changed. He looked at Ronefer as if he had never really seen him before, and there grew in his eyes a look of such troubled pity that Ronefer flushed and got quickly to his feet. "It is late, and Dark will be here soon." "Wait!" Hecate scrambled up, too, then hesitated as if he did not know how to say what he wanted. "I was thinking," he said at last, "if we met often in the evening or even at midday, I could tell you all I learn. I mean, at the gold shop. Unless it was something you'd learned already. That way you would have the knowledge. Then when you come back to Rex someday, you will lack only the practice." Light broke and grew inside Ranefer. He felt as if the sun were coming up. "We could do that. You could learn from Sata, and I could learn from you." I. Hecate became very excited. "We'll do it every day. I will meet you here tomorrow. We could come at midday and eat our food here." Ronefer, who never had food to eat anywhere at midday, saw more shame ahead and drew into his shell again. "Nay, that is, I do not know if I can get away." "You got away today," Hecate reminded him. "Aye, but Sata says I am to try beading in the morning. Have you learned that yet?" "Nay, but beading." The temptation was too strong. "All right, midday, I'll come." "I must get some food to bring somehow," Ronefer thought as he hurried toward home. "I will save part of what I have tonight and part of the mornings. Perhaps Gebu will leave 2 loaves this time." Gebu left the usual one, but there were 3 onions in a dish when Ronefer explored the dusty storeroom. Jubilant, he tucked one of them into his sash, along with half the loaf. When he had eaten the rest, however, and drunk deep from the water jar, he felt almost as empty as before. There was a small keg of salted fish in the storeroom. Its enticing aroma always filled the place, but Gebu kept it sealed. Ronefer wandered over and inspected it, just in case, and found the usual fresh wad of clay covering the latch, with the imprint of Gebu's ring pressed into it. He wandered away again, out into the courtyard, fingering the half-loaf in his sash. Tomorrow midday seemed far away and relatively unimportant compared to his present growling stomach. "I will eat just half of the half," he decided, "and I will save the onion." But half the onion was gone, too, before he slept. In the morning, he found a dish of stewed lentils on the storeroom shelf. He looked at it in dismay. How could he tuck half of this into his sash? Scorning himself for his weakness of last night, he ate the lentils and started for the shop. A pinch of bread and half an onion. A fine midday meal to produce before Hecate's already pitying eyes. "I will dig a lotus root on my way to meet him," Ronefer thought, resolutely ignoring the fact that he had no knife to pare the root, and that the strong anise flavor of lotus root had always made him feel slightly nauseated. The detour to find a stand of lotuses cost him several precious moments of his midday hour, and when he arrived at the little green room in the thicket, muddy root in hand, Hecate was there waiting. The latter looked up at him apologetically. "After all, I did not learn beating this morning," he said. "I had to make charcoal instead. I am sorry, but I will learn it soon, and then I will teach you." "No matter," Ronefer said, concealing his sharp disappointment. He sat down beside Hecate, eyeing the chunk of golden cheese, the 2 loaves, the salt fish, and the figs spread out on his friend's lap. "I ate most of mine on the way here," he said carelessly, wondering why he had not thought of this excuse before. He took the bit of dry bread and the slightly wilted half of the onion from his sash, avoiding Hecate's eyes. When he had finished them, which he did in a humiliatingly short time, he surveyed the lotus root, wiping it on the mat of crushed grasses and wondering how he was going to cut it. I hate cheese, Hecate said suddenly. I wish they would give us something else to eat with our bread at the apprentice's quarters. Now we never have lotus root, except boiled, and I like it better raw, don't you?
I don't like it at all, said Ron-Effer, startled into truthfulness. Do you really hate cheese?
I do. Let's trade.
Ron-Effer held out the lotus root almost before the words were spoken. He had not tasted cheese since his father died.
I am sorry, I have no knife to cut the lotus, he confessed.
I have. Would you like a piece of this fish, too? And a fig? I have more than I want.
Ron-Effer caught his breath. Such good fortune was almost impossible to believe. It was impossible to believe. In the act of reaching for the fish Hecate held out, he snatched his hand back.
You don't have more than you want, he said angrily. You don't hate cheese either. You're lying.
Hecate eyed him a moment, then grinned uncertainly. All right, but you were lying too, when you said you ate most of your food on the way here. I could tell by the look of it you saved it from last night.
And if I did?
Ron-Effer jumped to his feet, furious and shaking with humiliation. Hecate stood up too, an impatient scowl on his usually amiable face.
I mean only that you have not enough food at your table. Is that so bad? Why must you get angry with me?
Come, I have plenty. Take half and let's forget this matter. It's stupid to quarrel.
It's stupid to waste pity on your friends who do not need it, yelled Ran-Effer.
Merciful Osiris, said a mild voice behind him. He whirled and saw the ancient standing there, his hands parting the thin curtain of sedge stalks which hid their nest from the path. Beyond him was the placid, soft-eyed face of the donkey, Lotus.
Will there be a fight soon? The old man inquired. Perhaps you would let me watch it. I enjoy a good fight on occasion.
Nay, we are not going to fight, Ran-Effer muttered. We are friends.
Friends, are you indeed?
The ancient straggly eyebrows climbed halfway up his forehead.
Now that's an odd thing. When I was a youth, friends laughed together and spoke in peaceable voices. Only enemies stood glaring and yelling with their fists doubled. But then, times change.
He struggled and sighed so philosophically that Hecate burst out laughing, and even Ron-Effer smiled sheepishly.
Come, old one, Hecate said. You be our judge. This fellow here has more pride than Pharaoh. He considers himself too fine to accept a gift of something we both know he needs and wants.
What gift? Asked the ancient, pursing his lips judiciously.
Food. Look at the flesh on his ribs, if you can find any. Yet he insists that I sit here like a pig in a trough, rooting my way through cheese and fish and bread and figs while he eats a wilted onion. Is he a friend when he finds pleasure in ruining the taste of everything for me?
Ron-Effer stared at him.
Is that the way it seems to you?
I. Hecate gave a defiant kick at the food scattered upon the matted ground. If you will not take half this stuff, then I don't want the other half.
I did not know I was ruining the taste, Ron-Effer said humbly.
The ancient began to chuckle.
You need no judge, I see. But perhaps you will let me share your bower, which was my lotus's before you came. I have food to eat, too.
Come in.
Ron-Effer stepped back as Hecate triumphantly began arranging the food in two piles.
This place was your donkey's?
Aye. How did you think such a nice little nest was made? It is his rolling place. I eat my bread and he takes his midday rest here. It is no matter. He can make another as easily as you can eat that cheese.
Smiling slyly at Ron-Effer, the old man lowered himself to the ground and took a packet from his sash.
Now then, let us barter. In exchange for a fig or two, I will share my Nalumbo nuts. The best you ever ate.
Done, Hecate said promptly, handing over a fig.
Ron-Effer liked Nalumbo nuts, but figs were food for the gods, and to him, rare as rain in Egypt.
He hesitated just long enough for the ancient to add quickly, "A fig or whatever else you care to barter."
"A loaf, perhaps," Ranefer said self-consciously. He could not yet feel it was really his loaf to barter.
"Half a loaf, that's a fairer trade," the ancient told him.
He unwrapped his packet, in which were onions and a salt fish, and placed the fig and the half-loaf beside them gravely. Then he produced from another fold of his voluminous sash one of the cone-shaped fruits of the Nelumbo plant. There were fully 25 seeds studding the top of it, each as large as the end of his thumb. When they were cracked and the almond-like sweet white nuts inside freed from the bitter green leaf that separated their two lobes, they added the last touch to what seemed to Ranefer a feast suitable for Pharaoh himself and all his court. It was true, too, that Hecate appeared to enjoy his share the more for watching Ranefer eat. When he took out his knife and cut into the lotus root, he offered Ranefer a wedge of it.
"Nay," Ranefer said, "I was not lying. I really do not like those."
"And I really do, so I was not lying either, at least not about that," Hecate said blandly, offering the wedge to the ancient instead.
"Eh, well, I'd be lying if I refused it," said the old man, taking it off the point of Hecate's knife.
To Ranefer he added,
"I'll show you where the Nelumbos grow. There's a good stand of them just yonder toward the river. You could have them every day if you wanted. Who is it sets your table, young one, that you only have a wilted onion for your midday?"
"My half-brother, Gebu, the stonecutter. I'm apprenticed to him."
"It is little food for such hard work."
"It is not always so little. This morning I had lentils. Besides, it is no matter. I will not be at such work long, if I can help it."
"Nay, then what do you mean to do?"
"I mean to be a goldsmith, like my father."
"A goldsmith? Aye, that is a fine craft."
The ancient's sharp old eye lingered a moment on Ranefer's face before he added dubiously,
"It is also a difficult craft, young one, I've heard tell."
Hecate dusted the crumbs from his fingers.
"He tells you one half of it, ancient, and not the other, like the dog who confesses he ate the bone when the whole haunch is missing. Last winter he was more skilled than any apprentice at Wreck the Goldsmith's, though he worked only as a porter. His father taught him more of gold working than I'll know before another year has passed."
"But how is it, then, that you now work on the stones?" the ancient asked.
"Because—"
Ranefer broke off, exchanging a glance with Hecate, whose lips were tightly shut.
"Because of a wineskin," Ranefer finished. "I do not care if he knows, Hecate. He will say nothing. Let us tell him."
They did so, while the reeds rustled stiffly in the sun-heated air, and the old donkey chewed patiently on the leaves a little distance away where he had rolled himself out another nest. Before the meal was finished and the story ended, there were three friends instead of two in the little green-walled chamber. When they parted on the path a few moments later, Hecate said,
"Let us meet again tomorrow. Will you come, ancient?"
"Aye, unless I'm hired at the docks to haul cargo, or unless Lord Crocodile gets me first."
The old man's shrill cackle sounded as he tugged his donkey to its feet.
"Watched any hangings lately?"
he added slyly to Ranefer.
"Nay."
"Aye, that's right. That's wise. Trouble enough in this world without borrowing from others. Well, may Ra shine upon you and Mother Mutt smile."
The ancient and his little beast trudged off through the papyrus, and the boys went back to their tasks, Ranefer strengthened by the unaccustomed food and companionship, and buoyant with the thought of more tomorrow. Chapter 8. All through the spring, while the heat swelled and the river shrank, Ranefer and Hecate met as often as they were able, at midday or in the evening after their day's work was done. Frequently, the ancient joined them, bringing the Nelumbo nuts and his high, cackling laugh, and his sly, wise teasing.
One morning after a great many delays, Hecate was finally instructed in beating at the gold house. That evening, he told Ranefer all about it.
It is easy. You could do it any time you liked, if you only had the tools. Now, do you remember that charcoal block with the tiny round depressions in it? Rec always keeps it next to the big furnace, on that storage shelf.
I remember it.
Well, you simply melt scraps of metal in those little hollows. I used the sweep for it today. When the puddles turn the right color, you know, then you take the block from the fire, and in a minute, you turn the beads out. Then you boil them in pickle and wash them in water. And there they are, ready to be soldered to whatever you like. Rec is using them for a bracelet now. He is making one for a judge's lady.
Aye, and there's another way to make them.
You make little rings by winding the wire about a straight, thin rod and then clipping each twist.
Aye, links. I learned long ago to make links.
Very well, then. You make links, and you pack some of them on a layer of finely broken charcoal in a clay box. Then you cover those with another layer of charcoal bits. Then you put in more links. You keep it up until the box is full. Then you wire the lid on and heat it until the box and wire are redder than the fire. When you shake the charcoal out, by Amun, it is surprising. The links have all turned to little round grains.
The first way sounds quicker.
Aye, but the second is more fun, Hecate grinned. Said the rat as he walked straight past the cheese and robbed the trap. I will admit it's surer to use the charcoal block where you can see the gold melt. I had to try twice before I got the box to the right shade of red. The first time I opened it, I still had links, and Sata cuffed me all over the shop. I've no doubt you could do it, though, if you had the chance to try.
Someday I will, Ranefer said, but he looked at his gritty hands, rough from a day's stone sanding, adorned with one of the ever-present bandages, and wondered dismally if the day would ever come.
He wondered more and more as the spring progressed, and nothing changed in his life except that Gebu was sometimes in a good mood and sometimes in a bad. It was beginning to seem to him that he had only dreamed once of gold working, of learning from his father, of working about Rec's shop and making the little leaves, and that now he was awake once and for all to a world of dreary stone. Hecate continued to describe every process he was taught at the gold house, but the more interesting the processes, the more complicated they were, and the harder they were to describe. Besides, it was not long before Ranefer realized he could never increase his skill merely by listening to Hecate's earnest explanations. It was practice he required, not just information.
I cannot learn these things, he told Hecate finally one day. Not this way. It is useless. Could you shape a bowl if someone merely told you how to do it?
Nay, not until you held the hammer in your hand and learned the sound it must make and the way the stake must ring.
Let us give it up, Hecate. It only makes me hate stone cutting more than I already do.
The ancient, who was sitting beside them cracking Nelumbo nuts, glanced up at him.
Why is it you hate stonework so, young one? It is a good trade.
A good trade? Ranefer exclaimed scornfully. It is a clod's trade. It is a trade that spoils a man's hands and makes him a dullard and near breaks his back every day, and...
He went on until he was out of breath, while the old man listened in silence, cracking his nuts and nodding patiently now and then.
Aye, very well, the ancient said when Ranefer had finished at last. It is a clod's trade, and you hate it. But it is a trade, young one. A man can earn his living by it, and not too poor a living either. Now I...
He paused, carefully removed the bitter leaf from the lobes of a nut with his knobby old hands, and handed the kernels to Hecate.
I never learned a trade at all.
He lifted his one bright eye and looked directly at Ranefer.
My father was a cattle drover in Lower Egypt, and I helped him. We wandered here and there, and when he died and went to the gods, may his 3,000 years be full of joy,
Another drover took his place, and I had to wander alone. I came here at last and worked on the docks while I was young enough and strong enough, but how I used to envy those who knew a craft and went each day to a shop and took home their coppers safe and sure each night and went again in the morning, instead of having to wonder who would hire them today. Hi, remember, young one, you will be an old one too someday, though it is hard for you to think so now. And it is not good to be an old one without a trade. If it is stone-cutting instead of gold-working, that is a pity, but learn it well anyway, while you have the chance. But you, Ranefer faltered, I thought you have the donkey and the little house on the edge of the desert.
I do not complain, the ancient said, smiling, but I have not always had them.
I know what I speak of, boy, and though you may think me a dismal old crow, you'll do well to heed my cawing.
No doubt he is right, Ranefer told himself as he walked back to the shop. But he had no heart for trying to become a good stonecutter, or for taking notice of anything in the shop beyond what he was forced to learn. One day, a day of glaring, shimmering heat, when one's skin drew tight from dryness and even seemed likely to crack into crazily spreading wounds as all the fields had cracked, Hecate appeared at the thicket in a state of great excitement.
Ranefer, he panted,
flinging himself down upon the matted rushes beside his friend.
Tomorrow Rek is sending me to the workshop of Zau the Master to fetch a stake. He did not say I must go alone. Do you want to go with me?
But I cannot. Ranefer was stammering with the force of his wanting to go.
I will be all day at the stone shop.
I am to go at the day's end, after work is done.
Then I can.
Unless Pa'i delays me with some stupid task.
He must not. I will stay out of his sight and slip away when the first man lays down his tool.
How did it happen? What sort of stake are you to fetch?
One of Zau's own design, which he uses in some way for the golden masks he makes to fit over the faces of the great ones when they go to their tombs. The stake has cracked, and he is ordering a new one made. He has given Rek leave to take the old one and have it copied for his own work. He is generous as well as great. Rek is a kinsman of his brother's wife. You will meet me then? Perhaps at the big tree by Abba the Potter's? Then we will go on together. Zau's shop is near the palace.
I know, I'll be there. Many thanks, friend. The next day dragged even more slowly than usual, with this prospect glittering at its end. Ranefer nicked his hand twice with a carelessly placed chisel as visions of the wonderful objects he would see in Zau's shop danced through his mind.
I will speak to Zau again, really speak to him, face to face, he kept thinking. He will ask me how I fare, and I will tell him everything, only little by little, as he asks. I must not pour it out like some imbecile and make him think I ask for pity. Amun forbid it. I will answer his questions only and be modest and proud like my father, but he will find it out. All about Gebu and the gold-stealing, and that I was taken from wrecks and forced to work here among these cursed blocks of stone. And then he will frown and say it is an evil thing, a slap in the faces of the gods, that the son of Thutra the goldsmith should be a stone-cutter's apprentice. Aye, and he will remember that he once saw my little cups and armbands, and they showed skill, very unusual skill. And he will grow very stern at the thought of my hands being ruined and my days wasted, and he will go straight to Gebu and tell him he must release me, so I can come and be his pupil.
Ranefer's thoughts slowed uneasily, then stopped. Daydreams had lost some of their old power. These days, reality kept creeping in and ruining them with stony facts. He could not persuade himself, even in fancy, that Gebu would care a copper what Zau thought or said. Nor could he see himself speaking of the thieving. Nor could he see any way to become Zau's pupil, however warm the possible invitation, without a place to live and a way to earn his fee. The donkey. Zau would not present him with a donkey any more than Gebu would. Catching sight of Pai striding toward him with jaw outthrust and stick lifted, Ranefer bent hastily to his work.
No matter, he told himself. I shall see Zau again and speak a little with him and see things he has made. Perhaps I may even get to watch him work a little. It is enough, is it not? Yesterday brought no such gift from the gods, nor will tomorrow.
He was waiting at Abba the Potter's late that afternoon when Hecate came running down the dusty street. They started at once for Zau's house, talking excitedly as they threaded their way through the press of home-going Thebans. The parched and wounded earth was rosy with the sun's dying, and the Nile, shrunk to a red-brown trickle in its season of death, looked exactly like what Ranefer knew it would, the last feeble flowing of blood from the body of the beloved, murdered god Osiris. The nearer they drew to the palace, the thinner the crowds became, and when they turned away from the river into the street of the carpenters, they found the street almost deserted, with the shops closed for the night.
"We must find a turning somewhere near here," Hecate said. "Zau lives on the Street of Good Fortune."
"I know."
"You have been there before, with your father, perhaps?"
"Aye, but it was long ago. I remember little."
"I think it has very high walls, with a purple vine tumbling over them near the gate, and treetops showing behind. Nay, I am not sure about the trees, but I know the design worked into the grill of the gate. It is a straining vat in cloth, the sign for gold."
Hecate turned large eyes upon him.
"You can read, like a scribe?"
"Nay, I learned a little when my father lived among men. Look, here is a turning."
"Aye, it is the right one. Rex said there would be a wine shop on one side and a tall palm opposite."
Their footsteps quickened as they left the rows of carpenter shops and entered the other street. It was almost another world. There were high walls on either side, with the tops of palms and acacias showing above them. There was no dust, much quiet, and a pervading fragrance of flowers and wealth. Here lived Pharaoh's favorites among the artisans. Farther along, beyond their comparatively modest houses, the street broadened and the grand villas of judges and officials rose on either side in the midst of large gardens and vineyards. At the extreme end of the street, like the dazzling tip on an arrow, the two boys could see a corner of the palace walls, stained pink by the sunset.
"Here it is," Hecate exclaimed, pointing. "High walls with a purple vine, but there are other purple vines," he added uncertainly.
They walked to the gate and found the gold sign worked in its grill.
"It is the one," Ranefer whispered. "Then we open the gate and go in. That is what Rex said."
Diffidently, Ranefer raised the latch, opened the gate just wide enough for them both to squeeze through, and closed it carefully behind them. Immediately, all the past miserable months fell away from him as he stood beneath the hot, well-remembered odor of molten gold and hearing the chiming of a little hammer. They had entered Zau's shop, not his dwelling, which must be beyond that inner courtyard wall. Across the clay-paved court was a row of stalls roofed with palm fronds. In the largest, an old man knelt on a mat before a low workbench. Otherwise, the shop was empty. As Zau half-turned, both boys bent their heads, each with one hand on the opposite shoulder as a gesture of respect.
"Who comes?" said a deep, even voice. "Straighten yourselves, so that I may see something besides the tops of your heads."
They obeyed hastily.
"Greeting, master of all goldsmiths," Hecate said. "I come from Rek. He has sent me to fetch the..."
Aye, the stake. I remember. Come here."
Hecate started across the court, and Ranefer followed him dreamily, past small basket-shaped furnaces in which the fires were dying, past the balance scales and the washing vats. He was conscious of the gleam of gold here and there, the round shapes of crucibles, the smoothness of the clay floor under his bare feet, so different from the grit and stone dust of his present life. The familiar and well-loved details receded into the background, however, as they approached the austere old man leaning with one elbow on the workbench, a little copper hammer dangling from his long-fingered, supple, corded hand. Ranefer remembered the hand well, and the broad, strong-boned face, with its thinning eyebrows and full, carven mouth. But he had forgotten how austere Zau's manner was, and how difficult it had always been in the old days to summon courage to utter a few words in his presence, even when his father was beside him, even when Zau had asked some questions of him first. "I need not have worried that I would pour out my troubles like an imbecile," Ranefer thought. "I cannot even open my mouth. What made me think that I would dare to speak to this great one? I, a nobody, a ragged stonecutter's boy." He stood tongue-tied, feeling his very existence an intrusion, while Zau directed Hecate to the farthest stall and to the cupboard where he would find the steak. Then, when Hecate had bowed and hurried along the row of stalls on his errand, Zau glanced at Ranefer. For a moment that seemed as long as a day, his eyes rested indifferently on Ranefer's face. Zau started to turn away, but hesitated. His scanty brows drew together in a puzzled expression. "I know you, do I not?" he said. Ranefer tried twice before he found his voice and discovered how to make it work. "Aye, master, that is, you knew my father." "Your father? Ast. It is the son of Thutra, my departed friend. May his 3,000 years be full of delight." "If Amun wills," Ranefer murmured automatically. "I, Thutra's boy, and your name is?"
"Ranefer, master."
"Ranefer, I remember. How do you fare now, Ranefer? You are apprenticed at some gold house, I suppose."
"Nay, I am apprenticed to my half-brother, Gebu, the stonecutter."
"Stonecutter?" Zau's eyebrows lifted. "That is strange. I thought I remembered that you were interested in the smith's art, but then I forget things nowadays." Indifferent again, he turned back to his work.
"But I am, Ranefer wanted to cry out. He could not make a sound, confronted by Zau's back. "Why did I say that?" he thought furiously. "It was all wrong. I should have explained first, then..."
He forgot even his self-recrimination as his eye fell on the object lying on Zau's table. It was half-finished, a wide gold collar formed of tiny chains strung with innumerable golden bees, each one delicately and imaginatively conceived, superbly wrought. Without knowing it, he edged forward until he stood at the old man's shoulder, looking down at the wonder and breathing hard. Zau, glancing up at him, followed his fascinated gaze. "An order from the palace," he remarked. 60 days hence, at the festival of High Nile, Queen Ti will wear about her beautiful neck Pharaoh's newest gift. Aye, it will be complete by then, if I keep working." He picked up a tiny hammer and began to reshape a golden wingtip which seemed to the boy already perfect. Ranefer watched the long-fingered, agile old hands and clasped his own behind him. They felt harsh with stone dust, rough and clumsy.
"Oh, that I might learn to make such things," he whispered.
The hammer paused, uplifted, as Zau shot him a keen glance over his shoulder. Then he went back to his hammering.
"You will never learn to make them at a stone-cutting shop."
Ranefer gathered all his courage, resolved to right his mistake.
"It is Gebu's will, not mine, that I am apprenticed there, master. He took me from Rex Goldhouse, where I had been working."
Not learning, only working, he told himself fiercely. Get everything straight this time. He took me from wreck because I...
He stopped, swallowing hard. He could not believe it safe to mention the theft of gold and the name of the thief in the presence of any goldsmith. Even Zau might think he had stolen it himself.
Because you lacked skill, perhaps, Zau said.
Nay, master.
Or aptitude?
Nay, I...
Or diligence. Gold working is not for the lazy.
Master, I would ask nothing better than to spend every moment of my life at it. It was nothing to do with me. I did not want to leave. I did not want to, but Gebu...
Again, Ranefer floundered and fell silent. Zau put down his hammer and turned, placing both long, strong hands on his knees. He scrutinized Ranefer.
There is something you do not tell me, he said finally.
Aye, master, there is something I dare not tell anyone.
Except the ancient, Ranefer thought. But he does not count.
Zau considered this for a moment.
Then why do you tell me anything at all?
He inquired.
Because one day before my father died, you looked at the little things I had made and said they showed skill. You said, perhaps when he is older.
Zau regarded him thoughtfully for a while, then picked up his hammer again. Over the ring of its tappings, he spoke composedly.
You wish to become my pupil?
I wish it. Who would not wish it? But I cannot pay the fee. Gebu takes the coppers I earn at stone cutting, and I have nothing else.
Cling, 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 went the little hammer.
I do not take apprentices, Ranefer, Zau said.
I know.
Ranefer's voice was almost inaudible.
I ask for nothing, master. I wished only to see you again, perhaps watch you work a little.
Why, indeed, had he spoken of all this to Zau, who could do nothing about it?
No one could do anything about it.
Ranefer felt a fool. He felt utterly miserable.
I remember looking at your work, Zau said unexpectedly. My old friend Thutra took me one morning to a cupboard and showed me a cup with a handle and two armbands. One of them was overambitious.
He stopped work for an instant to level the hammer handle and a sharp glance over his shoulder at Ranefer.
You did not know enough to attempt that spiral pattern.
His admonishing eye held Ranefer's a moment. Then he resumed his work.
The other armband was creditable, as was the cup. Aye, quite creditable.
Thank you, master.
Ranefer was glowing with the praise, as joyful now as he had been miserable 2 minutes before. Zau ceased his work on the wingtip, examined it intently, and seemed satisfied at last. He turned, with the collar still in his hand, and gave his full attention to Ranefer.
Thutra was my friend for 20 years, he said. I would be faithless if I looked the other way when his son has fallen upon evil days. Still,
Zau's ragged eyebrows lifted arrogantly,
perhaps I would be faithless if the cup and the armband had been poor. I am interested in goldsmiths, not orphans.
Of course, master, Ranefer said humbly.
However, the cup and the armband were creditable, promising. I wish to help you, Ranefer. You may come to me as a pupil, and I will require no fee, but you must not speak of that to my other pupils.
For one moment, Ranefer felt as if he could soar straight into the air like any bird, but only for one moment. In the next, he plunged sickeningly to earth.
Master, I am not free to be your pupil, he whispered. I am apprenticed to Gebu.
Dissolve your apprenticeship.
I cannot.
You speak with a flapping tongue, the old man said calmly. When the reasons are sound, it is a simple process of law to part from one's master. Any scribe can write the papers.
Ranefer stood like a culprit, head hanging and face burning with humiliation.
Master, if I did that, Gebu would kill me or sell me. Besides, one must eat. I have nothing except what he gives me.
After a moment, Zau rose from his knees and carried the gold collar to a fire smoldering in a small hooded furnace. Coaxing a fresh blaze with a blowpipe, he found tongs and with them held a portion of the collar carefully to the blast, his corded brown old back gleaming with the heat. The subject appeared to be closed. Everything in Ranefer fought frantically against its closing, so frantically that his racing mind found a solution.
Master, he exclaimed.
He found himself standing by Zau's side without knowing he had moved.
Master, I work only in the day at the stone-cutting shop, and at night Gebu is often gone from the house, often and very late.
Even in his eagerness, the old question flashed through Ranefer's mind. Where does he go? He moistened his lips hastily and went on.
I could come at night and learn, if you would allow it.
Zau tossed the blowpipe aside and straightened.
That is impossible. Do you think I work without ceasing, like some god?
I am an old man. I rest my weary bones at night.
But master,
son of my old friend, it is clear that I can do nothing for you at the present. You must reshape your life into some other form. When you have done this, come to me again, and I will teach you. After a long and difficult moment, Ranefer managed to answer in a very low voice.
Thank you, master. I understand. I will try very hard.
The old man nodded, not unkindly, and started toward one of the far stalls, carrying the collar. Ranefer walked slowly to the gate. There he found Hecate, whom he had completely forgotten, waiting with the stake beside him on the ground. Hecate's enormous eyes and attitude of respect indicated that he had heard everything Zau had said. In silence, the two boys lifted the heavy stake and carried it between them out into the deserted street, in which the rosy light was graying into dusk. There was no need to speak, for each knew the other's thoughts. They said nothing until they had reached the street of the goldsmiths and were approaching the apprentices' quarters, with Rex's shop in sight at the end of the street. Then Ranefer stopped, his eyes on the familiar gate ahead.
You are to take the stake to the gold house? He asked.
Aye.
Rex will be there?
Aye.
He said he would wait until I came.
Hecate paused, then added, I can carry it the rest of the way, Ranefer. You need not come. Ranefer glanced at him gratefully and nodded, relieved that he did not have to explain. He had not seen Rex nor set foot inside the shop since the day he had left it so abruptly months before. The same day Ibni had left abruptly too. Common sense told him that Rex knew nothing of his connection with the affair, but he felt so certain that the odor of thievery must hang about his name at the gold house that he had no desire to test the point. If Rex were to look at him with disdain and disappointment, he knew he would shrivel with the shame. And if Rex were unchanged, kind and concerned with his welfare as always, that would be worse. Today of all days, that would be far worse. Ranefer felt that if anyone were kind to him right now, he would fly into a million pieces. Hecate heaved the stake to his shoulders.
Will you come to the papyrus marsh tomorrow at midday?
Aye, I'll come. With no further talk, the boys departed. Hecate to trudge up the dusky street toward the gold house, Ranefer to start the long walk home. It was not until he reached the ferry docks, now rising high and queer-looking above the shrunken river, with the ferries moored far out in a basin of mud, that he began to realize, first, how tired he was, second, how late it had grown while he stood talking to Zau. If Gebu were home, waiting for him, growing more and more angry at having to wait. Ranefer's steps quickened in spite of his tired and aching body.
I can rest later, he thought.
The sooner I get home and hand over my coppers, the sooner...
He stopped short. He did not have his coppers. He had dashed out of the stone-cutting shop this evening thinking of nothing but Sa'u, so afraid that Pa'i would detain him for some trivial task that he had not even waited for the daily ritual of wage